Super Shop of Horrors I read. I'm actually looking forward to what that means. Andrew will give us a talk about AD.
Thank you. Had enough of me already. So what I thought I'd talk about was basically Volker. Volker's to blame for this. He's not even in the audience. Ah, he said, yeah, I'd turn up to a talk on that. I'm looking at what's... I thought I'd just take a quick tour through some of the things Microsoft did to LDAP. And also, in doing that, reflect on how we cope with these changes and the mapping that we do, particularly if you want to talk to a normal LDAP server, because it's a mess. And my Microsoft friends were also promising to be in the room. Yeah. LDAP, nice standard protocol, been through a nice... What is booming on this? Can you turn that down? That's much better. So, LDAP, nice standard IETF protocol, a little too rich a history in the telecoms industry and X500 and all sorts of things, but yeah, at least we basically understand what it's about. Multiple free implementations, like any good protocol should be. So Active Directory comes along and decides it will sort of be based on LDAP. It will go off to the press and say, look, Microsoft, we're abandoning all these proprietary things and we're going to go for real internet protocols. To steal a line from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, it's almost but not entirely unlike LDAP. The only implementation is the only reference that we've got, the one that we have to match, is Microsoft's proprietary implementation. They're now releasing docs that try to explain what it is, but it really isn't the way you should be working with an industry standard protocol. I mean, the single biggest challenge that you have in working in this area is that Microsoft just changed things. The schema is different, and it's not just subtly different, adding a few things like a password field here or a few things. It's very different. Some key features of the schema and things I'll go through in the next few slides just don't exist outside the Microsoft world. And even things that do exist outside the Microsoft world are done differently. This makes it highly frustrating when you wish to have an enterprise with a different schema. You can't do it. It's Microsoft schema or no one's schema. You can extend it, although apparently it scares the bejeevers out of admins. Because they're not allowed to undo it, so they never want to do something they can't undo. But it's basically you can only work with Microsoft's schema, and you can't undo the things that they broke about it. For example, CN, standard attribute in all the standard servers, the CN is regarded as multi-valued. And very few people use it as multi-valued, but that's how it's regarded. But in AD, it's single-valued. So if you're doing some kind of implementation of merging data back and forward between these two types of directory, you've got to decide, what do you do with that second common name value? Do you just drop it? Do you decide which one to drop? And that's sort of the kind of things I'm going to be talking about in this talk. It's not that it's that Microsoft made a completely poor set of design choices. They did, but that's not really the point. It's the fact that they made different choices to what the rest of the industry had already well set up. By the time Windows 2000 was released, LDAP, although it wasn't everywhere, was being done, and a set of schemas had basically been agreed to. For example, it was deemed to be convenient that when a person is in the AD, that they not require a surname. If you have to map this to a standards track server, then surname is required. This is because machines are people too. Initials, for example, AD, for some reason, as far as I can tell, it's this way around. This is a war story from the Fedora directory folks. That's limited to 6 characters of initials, and in OpenLDAP it isn't limited. These are more things that when you're doing your mapping back and forward, you then have to handle this case of something might go wrong here, it can't be fitted in one directory or the other. And these things make it difficult for people to actually implement any kind of SAMBA 4 front end onto a standard back end, or products like the Fedora Directory Server has, where they have an AD synchronization. All these things are made more difficult by some of these changes. Most egregious change is the way that Microsoft has extended TOP. Microsoft added 75 new elements to top that don't exist in the standard schema. Because you can't change top in Open LDAP and most other standard servers, you've then got to find some other way to shove them into the schema so that you don't violate the schema when you need to store some of these extra details. One option, if you're going to be munging the schema, is you could add the attributes that are in top to every object class, or you can make a new object class that you sort of have a Microsoft top that you add as an auxiliary class to everything else, or the current approach that I've taken in SAM before, which is to make everything extensible object, which basically says, you know that schema? Forget about that. It doesn't matter. It's a real kludge on directory servers to be able to say that the schema has a wildcard at the end of it, effectively, which is not really the best way to handle these things. Another area that I came across when I was trying to enforce the schema, I learnt about a lot of these as I went through trying to make SAMBA 4 back onto Open LDAP, the task that I've been taking the last year over. Microsoft, as I started saying, well, let's pare this down, I won't do extensible object everywhere, I found that I need to look at these dit content rules, which effectively is an include from one schema object class. So it's an object class definition tells you which attributes that you may have in your entry, and effectively includes another object class into that. Very useful so that you don't have to repeat yourself and things. But it turns out there are limitations in X509 that Microsoft has ignored, but that OpenLDAP and other standard servers don't ignore. And so, again, this makes it a pain to translate. You can't just do one-to-one translations. You end up doing things like, I think here I'm going to basically handle this include manually in my scripts that process the schema files before I put them into the backends, so that the include effectively goes away. But I'm not quite sure what that will mean for some particular searches and things. I think this one occurs as a convenience to script writers. Basically, Microsoft allows string and binary forms to be used in its LDAP searches and I believe LDAP ads and things. It basically says object SID, which for some reason is recorded as a binary blob in the directory and is retrieved generally as a binary blob, may be specified as a string. No doubt makes it easier to write scripts and things, but it does mean that every time you're dealing with a different type of directory server, you've got to then add in a shim that says, by the way, look at this thing. Does it look like it's a binary blob or does it look like a string? And then you've got to convert it into the string format, which is what I chose for the back end. Similarly, object GUID, it's normally searchable as a binary blob, but every backend server that I know of keeps their GUIDs, the unique identifier on every record, in a string form. And so, you've got to do a munging back and forward. There's one Simo found just a couple of days ago and trying to figure out why his changes had failed. AD, and we generally find it's this way round. AD is fairly liberal in what it accepts. But it makes our life difficult if we've got to be just as liberal as AD, but then the standards-based server that we're trying to connect to isn't. So the problem here is that when we've got a Boolean matching rule like is deleted, it's either true or false. And if you searched for is deleted equals lowercase true, and we didn't do anything about it, OpenLDAP actually throws an invalid search error on us. So it's another thing that I've got to put into a table of little rules. I'm going to say, if you come across this attribute, and in future it's going to be if you come across this matching rule, but basically do this. In this case, it'll be a stir-upper to make sure that the matching rule will always match on our OpenLDAP backend. But it's the subtle little differences that are costing us. I had a discussion with Volker at one point. He was saying, you've got Open LDAP. Surely you can just handle the authentication and just put all this LDAP stuff across there. Then you won't have to be spending all your time writing on LDB. They do a good LDAP server. Why are you trying to replace it? And it's this list of horrors that all the work I'm doing is not actually on our database. It's on implementing these mapping tables. A similar little fun thing. Again, these are sort of liberal in what you accept, make it easier for the programmer. But don't look like anything you'd ever expect in a standard matching rule. This object category is declared as a DN, I think. But you can actually put in person when you are actually looking for scene equals person, scene equals schema, configuration, daily dom. No doubt it's much, much shorter to type. And you think, oh, okay, well, this is a fairly easy one to munge. I just take the first bit and I put CN on the front and then all the rest and then I go through and I'm done. But then you go through and do your work a bit further and you find that, no, what you actually have to do is you have to look up the schema. Because Microsoft has two names for everything. And so the object category NTDSA becomes CN equals NT-DSA and then the rest of the DN. And so you've got to do... To be able to map things to the back end, you actually have to read in the whole schema and then walk through the schema looking for one and then match the short name to the long name, and the long name is what we've been putting in the back end directory. I'm moving through this fairly fast. I should have mentioned at the start, I do like to be heckled and interrupted, so if you've got questions or you think I'm just getting well off the point, I would actually appreciate some comments and things, otherwise we're going to get through this too fast and we'll all get pretty bored. So please put up your hand and ask questions at any point. Some of the other horrors I came across. OIDs, object identifiers, are arranged in a hierarchical space. That is that you... So for example, 1 means ISO, 2 means organisation, 840 is US, something like that. And 11356 is Microsoft. So Microsoft should be, whenever they need a new OID, they go, they put that prefix on it, they talk to the person inside Microsoft who controls their OIDs, and they say, okay, well you can have 1.4 point, you know, something. So it should never be possible to come across an OID that has two meanings, because you can always, you know, it should have said, I'm taking this OID and I'm using it for this. But for some reason, middle name, which is something that only exists in the Microsoft world, has an OID that belongs under the Netscape tree. I had a chat with the Netscape developers. They now work for Red Hat. I used to work in their group. And they were very incensed, or more maybe just bemused, to see that Microsoft had stolen one of their OIDs. And so I actually have middle name conflicting with something else that Netscape had proposed as a standards-based attribute. And so it's included hard-coded in OpenLDAP. And so instead, adding to all my mapping tables is a mapping table that says, if you see this OID, replace it with one that I made out of the Samba tree so that you don't have two OIDs that have different meanings in the directory. Similarly, default group conflicts inside Microsoft. I looked up the OID registry and apparently it's also CalCapURI. And so they haven't even managed to talk to themselves. So, you know, we have these mapping tables, so I map one of those again to a Samboroid. Now, we've got our space and I have this nicely documented. And when is a DN not a DN? A distinguished name. It's a fairly common concept in LDAP, very simple. You have CN equals that, you know, and you just keep going down the chain with your bits and pieces. Except when you have an extended DN. So you can say, I'd like my DNs to come back augmented with a little bit of extra information, because I couldn't be bothered searching for these things separately. Now, I'm sure there are good performance reasons why you'd want this hack to be able to get back this little bit of extra information, but it means that when you're passing things back and forward, the DN includes a GUID, that's a globally unique ID identifier like we were talking about earlier, the user's SID, their NT-like identifier, and the DN. And so one of the ways that we currently handle that is that we then, whenever we return a DN, we then need to go back and do a search to find these extra bits of information. Or we need to follow Microsoft's lead and start including that. Except then I'd have to try and include it in OpenLDAP, and I'm not sure they're going to like this augmented thing. And when is a search not quite so simple? And when does it just completely break all the sensible rules about how you do things in LDAP? This horror, ambiguous name resolution, appears to come out of the earliest days of MAPI. Now, where have our OpenChange guys gone? They've gone... Oh, yes. And perhaps you... Perhaps Julian understands a little bit more of the history of this, but as far as I can tell, this ANR goes all the way back to the way early Microsoft mail clients worked, and you could search for a bit of somebody's name to send them an email. And so this ended up, because AD is effectively the Exchange database that had grown up, this thing has stayed around. And so, for example, you can search for ANA equals Bartlett, ANA equals Andrew, and both of those things will return me, but also return something that starts with Bartlett or Andrew. But so if you want to know if it's exactly Bartlett, you have to go ANA equals equals. Now, LDAP has a nice, good way of expressing this. You put a star on the end. So, yeah, this thing just fits nowhere in the standard way you do a search. Also, if you search for something with a space in between, it then goes and splits it out and says, I want to search for my for the first bit before the space as both a surname and a first name, and the second and the bit remaining after the space as a surname and a first name. You know, the client should be constructing this filter or something, but instead it's left to the server to do. And so this is actually a shortened example, but if you search for ANR equals Andrew Bartlett, it will expand out to this lot and more. And so we now have to have a module that goes through and basically writes that whenever this little search comes in, writes it out to be this massive big tree to search for all the different things that this rule. And this can be extended to actually search on any attribute by simply flipping a bit in the schema. It just isn't LDAP. It's just not what LDAP is meant to be about, particularly the egregious use of the double equals. It just seems, you know, it's something that's been kludged in basically to keep, you know, Outlook clients working without making them do more work on the client side, and so that old APIs can be preserved. But these are the things that we have to do the mapping on, because Microsoft has set the dominant standard. One of the other challenges, it's not really an egregious thing on Microsoft part, but more than one of the challenges that makes the idea of having LDAP backends, of moving from just having Samba on its own to having Samba talking to some other LDAP server, is handling the links of member, member of, and the like. Linked attributes are easy. You just, you know, whenever you update one side, you just update the other. But you've got to make sure that when the target is deleted, that you then delete the link, because you don't want a link that goes to nowhere. If it's moved, you've got to update things so you always have referential integrity. If you do a subtree rename, that everything gets updated correctly. If the source link is deleted, then the backlinks have to go away. Fortunately, one of our primary backends, OpenLDAP, has a refint module. This is meant to handle this. Along with a member of module, it should all just work. But OpenLDAP doesn't yet have transactions. So you can't prove that your database will remain consistent. The module operates asynchronously to the client. So you just get a note in the log if it all went to mush, rather than getting back an error and the whole thing failing. And it doesn't force a validation. It currently doesn't go and check if the target exists when you create the link, because you're allowed to create a link to nowhere. So we can't ensure even if we were to hope that it would always work and that transactions wouldn't be required, there's no hope of consistency, it doesn't check for us. Fedora DS has a member of module that should handle some of this, but without subtree renames, it's easier just to handle it on the Samba side of things, because the reason you get OpenLDAP to do it is because you want it to work with subtree renames, which OpenLDAP handles natively. So these aren't sort of, you know, fitting as much under the horrors of Microsoft as much as just the challenges of the work that I'm trying to do with having an LDAP backend. Wandering across just briefly into other protocols and some of the fun things that Microsoft did is Microsoft extended Kerberos with case-insensitive matching. It does make life easier. You type things all in whatever case you want and it seems to work. One of the fun ones I found this in their docs recently, there's effectively a wrong keyboard mapping. So that you can log in, and you log in with your name as best as you can type it on the local keyboard, and it will then go through and find your record anyway. I'm not quite sure how this works, given the various variations there are on how you transliterate various international names into ASCII, but there is this is an extra feature that they mentioned in some of their docs. And other than that, user principal names, where you log in as user at domain, but your realm may be something completely different, is not at all a standard feature of Kerberos and something Microsoft just invented on their own. I'm sure these features are useful. They do seem to make AD a much more usable thing. But none of them were developed in a standards process. None of them, all of them were basically presented to the community as, well, this is what we do. You may wish to talk to us. And so there is still fairly poor interoperability with free clients and these features. See, LDAP is an interesting one. It looks like LDAP. The framing is LDAP. But if you query for the attribute net logon as one of the attributes, the entire meaning of the packet completely changes. And so suddenly these ands and ors of things that you are asking to be filters, they're not filtering anything at all. Instead, they're jumping into a completely separate subroutine where it's saying that's just the input parameters on a call that otherwise should have occurred on MBT. But, you know, we want to do this in LDAP so that it's internet standard. I think it's one of the most egregious abuses of an internet standard protocol that you see. A fun area that I was working with the team for in the last couple of weeks is NTP, Network Time Protocol. The fields in the Network Time Protocol, by the way, are in network byte order. Like any good internet standard protocol, they're done, it's how you expect things. And it's specified through the IETF. There's a way to add extensions to it properly. Microsoft added their own extensions. And in a way that just shows that they weren't even thinking about, well, this is this protocol, I'm going to be careful how I step, I'm going to make sure it looks right. They added their key ID to say that this is the extension they made was authentication. They wanted to be able to prove that the NTP packet came from their domain controller so they could securely update the time. Because they use this to then make sure the time's correct so that they can then do Kerberos, because Kerberos is time sensitive. And if you accept unauthenticated time, you've effectively removed the benefit you got of making Kerberos secure with time, because you can then basically have an attacker play with you so that you take away that advantage. So Microsoft needed this extension. But they added the key ID in little endian when everything else is in big endian. They didn't tell anybody about it until the docs release just a moment ago. A few months ago, and added in a new Active Directory cryptographic scheme, which was incompatible with standard track authentication and incredibly poorly designed. Effectively, as I understand it, they concatenate the packet with the long-term secret that, and then do an MD5 sum, which means that if we, I'm looking at implementing this protocol in Samba or working with the NTP protocol to do so, I either have to have the NTP project send us every packet that comes into their server so that we can concatenate it with a long-term Kerberos secret of that host, or I have to expose all of the long-term keys to NTP so that it can do it. It just completely breaks the model of process separation while keeping any kind of sensible time synchronization, because the NTP project is rightly concerned with ensuring very, very accurate timekeeping, actually far more than we need, but that's their concern and what they worry about. And so they're not particularly happy with the idea of having every packet comes in going and passing across a domain socket for us to verify it. It's probably what I'm going to ask them to let me do and to say, well, give a note to your users that they won't get hyper-accurate time anymore. But it's just unfortunate that instead there wasn't a small negotiation of a subkey so that you would be able to say, when it set up this key, it would be able to go forward and say, here's a bit of a random value, concatenate that with the key, make the key that you'll use for checking time for the next little bit. It appears Ronnie has a question. Would you like to pass him a mic? At the end here. Left, left.
Yeah, well, why is that a problem, that external NTP daemon does that? Isn't your goal to embed every single service inside Samba 4?
it has been a habit, certainly. And I admit I was almost getting to the stage, because our early discussions, the NTP community weren't proceeding very well, and I'm thinking, come on, this protocol can't be too hard. We've got plenty of them already. But I really do want to avoid doing that, if at all possible. And I would prefer, if at all possible, to use that external project and just have a patch. Much as it is against our past behaviour.
So you're saying that NTP is a second-class citizen when it comes to protocols?
Maybe they wish to remain in first class and not be as sullied. Question on the right. Steve.
So there are two questions. One is, if I remember correctly, this solved a real problem with authentication and security of NTP, so I don't know if I want to throw too many stones at Microsoft on this one. But it would have been nice to go through a standards group so NTP wouldn't, their developers wouldn't argue with us. So I am curious what problem the feature solved, or solves multiple problems. The second is, so we're left with two implementation choices, either ARM twist NTP or do our own. But I wonder, can't they just call one of our libraries to do this?
Yes, what we're basically going to do is that we're going to, and the NTP team is actually, after a bit of argy-bargy back and forward and us talking past each other, we actually did manage to agree that basically they're working on a pluggable authentication interface anyway for their stuff, and they're happy enough to have a sort of an interface where they can call us. And I'm hoping they'll be able to ship that interface with their code. We'll see what happens when it's written. But yeah, at the moment it looks like we will implement it in NTP, they will call a small library which will then do either talking across a domain socket or looking up our database or something. But that should be able to sort of handle the problem.
I mean, a TDB or LDB access would seem to make sense because then you avoid the inter-process communication the TDB access, direct memory access.
Yeah, TDB access could certainly work. It would bring in all of our LDB modules into their address space and all of the potential to then talk off to a remote LDAP server. But
you could actually mirror this stuff into a TDB, which doesn't bring quite as much in, and have them linked to libTDB.
So the problem there is that we don't necessarily know who will, because it's the read, it's the machine's read and its long-term key.
Is there a single key?
They don't necessarily talk to us first before they talk to the NTP server. You could cut down our domain database on a regular basis into a TDB that was very simple to look up and deem the NTP server to be trustworthy enough to handle our long-term keys. I think that's certainly a possibility.
And it needs only read access too.
It needs only read access. The main issue would be making sure it'd be easy when we're the only ones updating our database. If we're talking about, like when I'm talking about remote LDAP servers, that password could change elsewhere. And so that would be a complication.
Maybe the domain socket's the right thing to do.
I think the domain socket and reading it exactly the same we do with everything else and just throwing some of the accuracy out the window. We're only trying to get it within 5 minutes. They're working mostly for national labs trying to get it down to nanoseconds. So it's just a matter of, I don't think the resolution matters for us as much. But we've got to work nicely with them, and fortunately we finally were able to, but it's frustrating we're put in such a position.
Microsoft, if I remember correctly, added it because there were security reasons.
The security reason is, as I stated at the start, if you are allowed to mess with the client's time before they start doing Kerberos, you can do all sorts of damage because you could get them to issue a ticket into the future, and then you've got, say, days, you could a couple of days ahead, you could use the ticket and spoof somebody.
So my bags are in Heathrow. Now they're going to be here in a day and a half because, this is sort of, I'm familiar with the problem. When we first did Kerberos, we'd wait, we'd have a test bug and it would take a day and a half to log on again to the server because the time could never sync fast enough, right? Because I guess they must have some sort of approximation where it gradually gets close to the right time. But so spoofing the client's time is a very bad thing, right?
Mm.
But that doesn't have anything to do with Samba. Just because Samba has a 5-minute limit doesn't mean that this feature of improved security wouldn't matter to an application with a 10-second granularity requirement. So I guess what I'm saying is that the NTP community shouldn't hate us just because we're doing this, and we should care about better granularity of time, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think that any of this, and even talking across our domain socket, is going to be taking more than a few hundred milliseconds or something. I don't imagine we're putting much jitter into it. In fact, they've even got ways of the NTP Codebase has ways of even estimating authentication jitter because they're worried about it, just how many DES cycles you'll go through for doing it. They're actually set up very well for coping with some of that if they need to, because I'm talking a bit about that. But I'm just going to wait, put it through and see how we go, and just see if the delay in talking to us ends up being a problem, and then we'll make some, because they can do things like, you know, database access should take 500 milliseconds, so you pre-compute the time to be 500 milliseconds ahead and then delay to put it out until then. There's little tricks that can be done. So apparently they've thought about all this before, but so it shouldn't be too bad. DNS. Microsoft was the first to move to GSS T-SIG. This is using GSS API to sign DNS packets. It may well be the correct application of the protocol, but for about 5 years, no one else was actually implementing it. And so this is one of our little challenges, is to finish configuring this into DNS servers and things so that clients can do a dynamic update of their names. Just another of these little things, Samba has itself in very many protocol stacks. And yes, we've been trying very hard not to add DNS to our list. I think we would do a very poor job with DNS. I think there's much better bit left to other projects. It seems to have got an awfully complex protocol of late. So why bother? Why do we do all this? Why not just stick to our guns? Look, the Linux desktop will get there eventually and this will all be irrelevant. But I think that if we allow Microsoft's monopoly to continue in unhindered, even if it means doing some of these protocols on their terms, then this will just be the start, and we will just end up having more protocols getting just sort of mangled, and you know, we will have even less choice of what domain controllers we use and how we run our networks. So I think it's critical that we do actually implement some of these bastardized protocols, that we do so as well as we can, and that we then turn up at when Microsoft is talking about new ones and say, hey, can you not do that next time? But the reality is that we do really need to work in these areas. Despite all this, Samba 4 works, with implementations of most of this, with DNS and NTP being on the to-do in the near term. Even the LDAP backend works. Not as much as I would prefer. Look, I have test suites that fail and things, but then people are actually trying it out and saying, hey, it works enough for us. So I'm very happy that we really have got through a lot of these things. And the reason I can talk about most of these problems is because they're solved problems that I understand the scope of and we've got to the other end. And the LDAP backend, which is the primary thing I'm sort of talking about here, I think it might just be worth it. It really, I think, is important to be able to leverage somebody else's authentication replication scheme. Not having to re-implement replication ourselves, we want to do it against Microsoft servers, but being able to use OpenLDAP or Fedora Directory particularly Fedora Directory's multi-master replication, OpenLDAP's replication, I think that's useful to Samba. I think that the more lofty goal of I've got a POSIX-like server that looks like most other servers do, and it has the one account where every detail is in there, and Samba reads that account, I think that's really important. It's a lot of work to get there, because we effectively have to fake up most of the bits of the Microsoft schema. We have to find our way through the compromises that I've listed. But I think that's a really worthwhile goal. And I think that Samba should be the thing that's forcing these things into the open. You know, we have a motto of opening windows to a wider world, and I think we should still do that. And we should be working to make ourselves the bridge between worlds that are the way Microsoft does things and the way that the rest of the community works. But at this point, I would like to ask for some volunteers. Someone got a spare year? No, I don't know how much time it would take, but I would like to throw open the task that I have been working on, of working on the LDAP backend to a new maintainer. Somebody who has a traditional LDAP server that they'd like to be able to back Samba 4 onto, and can work on chasing up the features and things. I'm still going to be around and doing this stuff, but I'm going to try and move on to a few other tasks because I've worked so long on this particular one. And just keeping the LDAP backend working. It seems to be such a valuable feature. It certainly, I won't allow it to be lost, but if someone else has the energy to try it out and actually to work with it and see how it performs in the real world, I would really appreciate it. One of the other challenges is ACL mapping. Working between Microsoft ACLs, which do get set by the client from time to time, and the ACLs in the back-end server. But it will always be a difficult area, but if we can make it work right, being a really good bridge between something that looks Microsoft-like for Microsoft's client and something that is standard, the way that we prefer to build our directories, I think will be a huge payoff and really will be worth the time. People seem to be interested enough in all that backend as it is, and I think there really will be good interest and it will behave much like Samba 3 behaves, where you add in a bit of schema, in this case there'll be quite a lot of schema, but that it doesn't have to fundamentally change your directory. It's a goal that we're not there yet, but I think it's an important one, and I hope that somebody may wish to approach me on the mailing list or in person here to see about pushing that forward, because I think that's an area that could be very worthwhile. Any other questions? Steve again.
What about DHCP though? I remember there were some security features added to that, and I'm wondering about secure update of DHCP and DNS talking to each other as addresses change. Do we need to pull the DHCP server too?
I haven't seen anything on DHCP and Active Directory. I just haven't looked at it.
DHCP DNS, if a company is deploying a Unix-based DHCP server, then there's a pretty good chance I think they're also deploying a Unix-based DNS server, in which case there are already existing good crypto mechanisms for setting up DHCP to DNS hooks. It would only be if they were deploying a Microsoft DNS server with a Linux-based DHCP server or vice versa that you'd have to do the Microsoft security mechanisms between the two. And I think I don't think that would be on a critical path to getting, you know, deployment release, et cetera, if you want the secure updates to your DHCP, to your DNS based on your DHCP leases granted, then assume that you're running the, you know, bind and the DHCP3 server and you use the standard key-based updates that everyone, you know, I assume you use and other people, you know, everyone uses on their home network to do DNS updates for dynamic domains. Yeah, but I mean, when Samba 4 provisions, it creates the appropriate config file for bind to throw in all those records.
Yeah, so if you're not using a Microsoft DNS...
Sorry.
Okay, so if you're not using a Microsoft DNS, then it makes sense what you described. If you buy into a Microsoft DNS with a non-Microsoft DHCP, then you need those...
I think if you're using a Microsoft DNS server, then requiring, if you're using Samba 4, to use a Microsoft DHCP server to combine the two might be reasonable.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Anyone particularly want to talk about the LDAP backend? Is that stuff that people want to see move forward? Something I should just drop like a hot potato?
It needs to keep working, but I think it's working pretty well now, and I think some of the other things on the to-do list are a higher priority right now. I think it's perfectly reasonable for you to start working on some of the other higher priority ones, also to save your sanity. It's just been an absolute nightmare getting all these details right. You've done an enormous, fantastic job to get it this far. So take a break and work on something different. Recover your sanity before you start trying to get the last tweaks of it and get some of the other low-hanging fruit going.
Thank you for your kind words. Any other comments? That wasn't a hand, that was just brushing your hair. Okay, well, I think we're out for a break, aren't we?
Yeah. Then we can go for the break. Well, thank you.
My pleasure.